So, Danny, I wanted to ask you about the parlous state of the British economy and the connection between the spiralling levels of inequality that you've charted so effectively and the kind of the central thrust of the economic project pursued by the establishment here.
The economic project isn't going well in reality. We do not produce that much of great use to the rest of the world. We didn't for a long time because we had an empire, and the empire actually made us money. If you look at what we do now, we don't produce that much in the way of agriculture. Our manufacturing sector has not been this small as a proportion put for at least 150 years. We rely on services and finances, and a lot of what they do is not really of great benefit to many people in the rest of the world. They're involved in exploiting others, and they often make mistakes in terms of this. So our bankers did much worse than bankers elsewhere in Europe in the crash. We're involved in more rigging of markets, and then we get found out. And at the height of our economy at the moment, if you look at the very best paid person in the economy, it's Martin Sorrell, who runs a company, WPP, which is paid to do advertising to try to entice people in the world to buy things they don't really want. That is where it's come to with Britain. It's a sorry state, but it's at the end of an empire.
And so how does this relate to the way in which inequality is ramping up?
Part of the reason why inequality has been rising since the late 1970s is that we've lost those jobs in the middle, the well-paid manufacturing jobs, the decently paid jobs. We've seen a big increase in jobs at the bottom. More than one in ten of the British workforce work in shops, often standing around saying, can I help you with that? Try to get you to buy a pair of jeans that you wouldn't want to buy otherwise. We have a huge number of what we call very low-skilled jobs. Often they're not low-skilled. This is making food for children to eat in school. The jobs in the middle have gone, the jobs that paid a decent amount of money, and there's been an increase in a small number of jobs at the top, which are now paid ridiculous amounts of money. So somebody running an advertising executive company would be paid millions now. Mm. Whereas in the past, somebody involved in advertising, you know, would be lucky if they made £100,000 if they were in charge of the company. Mm. It has become excessive because those at the top are just trying to take out what they can quickly, because I don't think they have much faith in the future either.
Well, you've written that this process is unsustainable. What did you mean by that exactly?
If you roll it forward, if you take the growth in inequalities that we've had, the rising take of the 1%, which continued after 2008, you quickly get to a situation where it's very hard to see how you convince most people that this is in any way fair. Since 2008, incomes below the top 1% have dropped, and there's actually been a great increase in equality amongst the 99% of people in Britain. This includes doctors, this includes head teachers, and people at the bottom. They've come together economically, but they're not feeling happy about it because they've come together by seeing their incomes cut, and they've watched a small group of people take more and more. At the very top of British society, the 1,000 richest people in the country more than doubled their wealth in the 5 years since 2008. There's a point at which you really cannot fool 99% of people for much longer.
At that point now, because it seems to me that if you put together the revelations in the Panama Papers, the disastrous budget, the general sense of crisis within the Tory party, it's almost as if the mask is slipping right as we speak.
The mask has to slip at some point. The rise in inequality with the 1% taking more and more cannot continue forever. It never does. In world history, we never see the rise carrying on forever. It always comes to an end at some point. This looks like a very good candidate for the mask slipping. I mean, what the Panama Papers have shown us is that they were laughing. They were taking the money, hiding it, not paying a tax, pretending that they were, and thinking all the time how stupid all those little people are in Britain that pay their taxes. They were laughing at us, and we found out they were laughing at us. Now, are we just going to take it? Are we just going to be mugs? And there's more to come. We've only seen the first 200,000 documents of the Panama Papers analysed so far. There's still about 10.8 million to be analysed. There's also another three even larger offshore finance firms just waiting for one employer to download it onto one of those data sticks. We're going to see a summer of revelations coming out. And what you have to remember every time you see a revelation is that they were laughing.
Specifically, do you think that the whole electoral project behind Corbyn is liable to be an effective challenge, an effective project, challenging what are, after all, kind of structural problems, deep-seated structural problems in the British economy?
They're deep-seated, but the election of Corbyn on such a massive majority, the support from such a large proportion of his party, the growing support you often see in opinion polls, the rises in voting in by-election. You know, if you step back, this looks very impressive. It looks similar to what people in the past did who were described as nondescript. Attlee was seen as somebody who would be a terrible leader of the Labour Party. How could they possibly be a leader of the Labour Party? And we got the welfare state and the NHS. You know, remarkable things do happen. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but imagine what it would be like if you didn't have Jeremy Corbyn there.
And what about the way in which the establishment would respond? I mean, as we get nearer to a scenario in which it's just conceivable that Corbyn could become elected, what about the media? What about the international financial institutions? What about the civil service and those forces?
I think, from my point of view, the important thing to understand about the establishment is it is not a conspiracy. It's much more dangerous than that. It is a set of people who honestly hold the belief that only a few people are able to govern and understand, and that's them, and the mass of humankind are misguided beneath them. Now, the mass of humankind includes the person operating the camera that is filming them as they talk on the BBC. That is what the establishment are. They have been brought up to hold these views. They've gone to universities that have told them that they're special. They're paid salaries that can only be justified if they are that special. And so for them, if you've believed all your life in this, to have somebody like Jeremy Corbyn come up and behave differently and not spend a lot of money on suits and pay all his taxes and more and appear to be impervious to greed, that threatens their identity, because they've been greedy and they've learnt, they've been told that it's okay to be greedy. And it's very difficult for them. And I think, I'm not saying we should have sympathy for people in the establishment, but if we look back at the past, it took the establishment a good decade in the 1930s to shift their view from outright eugenicists and people who would happily have sided with Hitler through to people who didn't prevent a Labour government coming to power in 1945. And in some way, some of the establishment aided that. William Beveridge was a member of the establishment.
So you think this is a moment where we could see fundamental change?
I think it's a very possible moment for that. If I was betting on it, it's hard to see another set of circumstances coming together quite so fortuitously, and also a situation in which, you know, you're asking the vast bulk of the British population to accept a future in which their children will have to pay almost all of their disposable income in rent for the rest of their lives, will find it very hard to start families and have children of their own because of the way the housing situation is moving. Will have to move between a precarious series of jobs unless they're one of the tiny few that makes it to the top of this greasy pile. But I don't think so little of people in Britain that I think we have some natural serfdom in us that means that we'll doff our cap and say, that's okay, beat me more.
Danny Dorling, thank you very much. See you at the Dangerous Times Festival.
Thank you.